Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the "no animals were harmed" message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
The Hartman Report, this podcast you're listening to, is brought to you by Phone.com. Phone.com delivers the most comprehensive suite of phone features for business at the lowest price. Check it out at Phone.com. Use the code TOM, T-H-O-M, to save 20%. That's P-H-O-N-E.com, code T-H-O-M, Phone.com, code TOM.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you live from Elmhurst, Illinois, suburban Chicago. We're at the Bricklayers District Council building. Our show here is being supported by or facilitated by the Bricklayers District Council 1, Smart 265, the Painters District Council 14, the GWC Injury Law Firm, the Roofers, Waterproofers, and Allied Workers Local 11, and Operating Engineers 399. And we're having representatives basically from all those groups and all those folks at various times throughout the program today. And we're looking at not just the elections and not just the debates and all this kind of stuff. In fact, that was, you know, mostly the previous hour that we were talking about each person's take on the debates and how it's working out. What do you think about that? But also the issues that labor is facing right now. So with us in the panel right now for this segment, Jeff Eppenstein, who is the international rep with the Roofers, Waterproofers, and Allied Workers, Matt Gugala, who is the vice president of Smart 265, and Jim Allen, the president of the local Bricklayers, BACADC District Council 1, to be technically accurate. And so, you know, training tomorrow's labor. Where do we start with this? Jim, you want to kick this off?
Well, everybody in the building trades, and that's what we can speak for today, has training centers that are world-class training centers. And what we do is we take people off the street that want to be in the trades, and we give them an opportunity to make a great living. It's a career. It's not just a temporary job. We have instructors that take a kid, male or female, start them out. They may be 18, 19 years old, and we train them, and then we get them to work with our signatory contractors, and they go on to have a career in the construction industry. And it's every one of our unions have these schools, which is amazing. And I think it's probably, someone had this, I wish I had the exact quote, but I think we are the biggest training facilities in the United States. Am I right, Jeff?
My understanding is second
only. This is Jeff Eppenstein.
Jimmy, my understanding is we're second only to the Department of Defense.
That's amazing.
Wow.
In training.
Nationwide?
These nationwide JATC, Joint Apprenticeship Training Programs, are the second largest educator next to the Department of Defense. That's all colleges together. We have more training going on, and we self-fund that training.
Right.
And collectively, we invest $1.5 billion annually. So $1.5 billion annually
in training.
With all the trades put together in training.
Yeah.
With no tax dollars.
With no
That's
tax
all
dollars.
Private.
This is all funded by union
Union contractors.
Yep.
yeah. and our dues.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's amazing stuff. Just to reset this, because you know sometimes people just tune in. You're with Smart 265. The union represents
sheet metal, air, rail, and transportation.
Okay, cool. My dad was in a tool and die shop, and now this is the good old days, right? I'm remembering the 60s, the 50s, and 60s, and the 70s. Well, you know, I left Michigan in the 70s, but
I'm too young for that. You know, yeah, I'm only 18.
Well, I'll tell you where I'm going with this question. Is, you know, they had a little tool and die shop. It was owned by a local family. They treated the workers really well. It had it was a member of the union. And in that tool and die, which was a 12-man shop, and in that tool and die shop, they had their own training program. They had their own apprenticeship program. It took a couple of years, as I recall, to become a journeyman, you know, as a machinist, as a tool and die maker. How have things changed since then?
Yeah, things have changed drastically. Yeah. So now the people that we have working behind the scenes to get these programs together that are accredited by the Department of Labor, they have to go through trials and tribulations to get a program that's college worthy, basically. Mm-hmm. Right. So back when they had it in the tool and die shop and back in the past where that we're just teaching somebody how to do this.
Right. It was kind of an internal process.
Exactly. Now it's regulated, and it's the level of it has been stepped up to which we're taking workers that have in the past been exploited, right? You're training them how to be safe and how to be skilled. So then they all work together. So you're actually training them how to do their job, how to be safe on their job. There's other skills other than, you know, swing the hammer. Right. So they're learning these things and learning how to live with dignity and be able to retire with dignity and have health insurance and raise their families and all that stuff. So the importance of these, it's immense.
Yeah. So when you know, somebody used to go to work at Lansing Tool and Die and they'd end up, you know, being a journeyman there through that, they learned the machines that were in that shop, you know, where my dad worked. If they went someplace else, unless they had those same machines, they didn't have that necessarily that skill set outside of the general principle. So what you're saying is we're training people across a broad spectrum of things within this particular specialty so that they can work pretty much anywhere.
That's right? Exactly right. So yeah. So they have different disciplines that they're going to go through. They're going to learn a little bit of electricity. They're going to learn how to do schematics. They're going to learn how to install sheet metal panels. They're going to learn all of the skills that come along with our trade so they can do it safely and properly and equitably for the owners of the companies too.
Yeah. Yeah. Jeff Eppenstein, the international rep for the roofers, waterproofers, and allied workers. One of my brothers was a roofer, a great guy, by the way. And I knew that he had a skill set that at times baffled me, and they could put a roof up really fast, but I never thought of it as a quote skilled trade, but it's really become one. And or maybe it was all along, and I just really didn't know because I wasn't there, you know?
It definitely is a skilled trade, and I know my dad's listening right now, so yes, we are skilled workers. Yeah. But it always has been, even back when my grandfather was a roofer.
What I meant was something that you wouldn't go to school for.
Right.
You know, you just learned on the job.
Apprenticeships didn't really start until about the 70s. You were trained on the job. But now you have these advanced apprenticeship training centers. As Jimmy Allen said, you know, we're self-funded, so we don't get any government money to train these apprentices. Our contractors contribute to that training fund, and that's how they get the training. So now an apprentice comes in, and he's not only learning on the job, but he's learning in a classroom setting also, and starting with all of the safety. So when you get a job site and you have workers that come out that are untrained, that customer has a lot of liability on their hands. A, are they going to put on a proper product? Is it going to perform as it's supposed to? And are they going to do it in a safe, productive manner so someone doesn't get hurt on your property? That's the skill sets that we instill at the JATC programs. And as Matt said, many of these programs are accredited. The Roofers Apprenticeship Program is now embarking on also having an accreditation. So these kids here, they have another option other than a lifelong debt in college. They can come into a training center. They can earn as they learn because they're going to earn their paycheck Monday through Friday. And some of them have weekends. Some of them had night classes. But now there's going to be an extra little caveat, at least in my trade, and they're going to be able to earn some college credit while they're taking that class. So that if labor is not their stronghold and they end up going somewhere else, at least they earned some college credit while they were there and they didn't earn debt to get it.
Yeah, and that's a good thing. California, I think, is requiring solar for every new house that has to be built. In China, they have literally built a couple of cities in the last 5 years where every single house is roofed with photovoltaic cells.
That's
not
correct.
Not above the roof, but it is the
is
roof.
The roof.
You guys are, I'm assuming, right at the front, leading edge of this stuff.
Absolutely, you know, a lot of that technology is out west and south, but it is also here in the Chicagoland area. And one of the things that's really big in the Chicagoland area is these outdoor green spaces. So green roofs. So you've got patios, you've got gardens, you've got play areas, you've got dog runs up there. You'd be amazed what's up on top of a roof if you ever really, I guess, do what I do for a living. So yeah, there's a lot of other things that are there, but it does all start with the training, and I'm real proud that our apprenticeship programs are the best in the world.
That's great. Jeff Eppenstein, Matt Gugala, and Jim Allen. We'll be right back with more of our labor panel and our labor conversations throughout the day here from the Bricklayers District Council in Elmhurst, Illinois, and via WCPT. Stick around.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll be right back with more on the future of labor. We're going to talk about employment misclassification. This is amazing stuff. Stick around.
Up until last year, I'd never endorsed a weight loss product, but I decided to change that because after reading about university research into a molecule in olive oil that regulates appetite, my wife and my producer convinced me that this one was worth sharing. Well, a year later, I'd have to say they're both right. Louise said once her appetite and cravings were under control, losing weight was easy and she's kept it off. Same for Sean. I've also heard from listeners that it worked for them. The fact that the only ingredient in Riduzone occurs naturally in the body and is completely non-stimulant has appealed to folks as well. Listen, if you're looking to lose weight this season, I strongly suggest you give non-prescription Riduzone a try. Use the promo code TOM, T-H-O-M, and receive up to 65% off plus free shipping. Go to Riduzone.com. That's R-I-D-U-Z-O-N-E.com. Riduzone, R-I-D-U-Zone.com. Use the promo code TOM, T-H-O-M, and receive up to 65% off plus free shipping. Go to Riduzone.com. That's R-I-D-U-Z-O-N-E.com. Riduzone, R-I-D-U-Zone.com.
I want to get into right to work in this segment, and we're joined by John Daniel, the business manager for Smart Local 265. John Spiros is still with us with the painters, and Jim Allen, of course, is still with us with the bricklayers. But I also would love to hear, because right to work, I mean, so-called, I call it right to work for less, and I think the Democratic Party should make that the official phrase and just, you know, always use it every time a Democrat says anything, although, you know, I've been beating that drum for 15 years and I haven't been able to get anybody to consistently do it, so maybe I'm wrong, I don't know. But messaging, this is really important stuff. To start with you, John Daniel, the business manager at Smart Local 265, your thoughts on, well, first of all, let's define right to work or right to work for less. This goes back to Taft-Hartley, 1947, as I recall. It was passed, Congress passed it. The Republicans took control of Congress, passed this thing. Harry Truman vetoed it. Did he veto it twice? Am I recalling that correctly? I know he vetoed it at least once.
You got a better memory than me.
Yeah, well, you know, he fought this thing. He fought this thing, and he was really the last Democrat to fight it, which is really tragic. So give us a quick fill-in here on what this is.
I think your phrase, right to work for less, is framed very well. Unfortunately, our party at large, the labor movement, we're not marketers, right? We put our boots on every day. We go to work. We try to provide for our family. So the idea of creating a message for right to work, we just haven't been good at it. So the message is right to work undermines the fabric of our communities, the ability for our members to feed their family. It's an anti-union, anti-worker legislation that's been pushed heavily across the entire country. Fortunately, with our new Governor Pritzker in Illinois, who just banned right-to-work zones in Illinois, we're a stronghold. Mm-hmm. But we're under attack constantly with the messaging of right to work.
Yeah, because the whole right to work for less thing is that as an employer, if my employees decide that they want to unionize, I can pretty much stop that. I can block it. I can drag it out. I don't even have to recognize the union if it's a right to work for less state. Do I have that right? I know there's a lot of nuance to this law.
So the way we frame it, right to work gives employees the opportunity to be a freeloader in a collective bargaining environment. That's I don't know how else to say it. It would be no different than if I wanted to join the membership of a health club down the street, and if there was a right to work legislation that said all health clubs were right to work, I would have the right to join that health club and not pay the dues to be part of that health club.
Oh yeah, so this goes beyond what I was talking
absolutely
about.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a complete attack on the entire infrastructure of who we are as a collective people, bargaining in unison.
And some of that actually has been strengthened, fortified, that is the right to work for less part of it, by several Supreme Court decisions over the years.
Sure.
So
the way the Supreme Court structured currently and what our current president has done and been allowed to do at the Supreme Court level is an absolute attack and on all of us in this room and all the listeners, not only from a collective bargaining standard, but a human rights standard, the ability to provide for your family. It's been an all-out assault to continue to shift the money from the people that get up every day to go to work away from them and to the small percentage of people that put that money in their pocket.
John Spiros, the business manager for the Painters District Council 14. Your thoughts on this?
Well, right to work, like he says, strictly to undermine the union principles and the union ability to represent the members. Depending on what state you're in, all the laws vary a little bit, but quite frankly, you don't have to pay dues, but you get all the benefits. Right. You get the negotiated contract, you get the grievance procedures, and who has to pay for it? You don't, as a non-paying member. To go back to what we were talking before with the political end, this is where electing good politicians to offices makes it work. Under Bruce Rauner, our old Republican, he tried to incorporate different municipalities to be right-to-work zones to undermine prevailing wage.
Right.
Okay.
This is the Republican war on labor.
That's right. And since Pritzker's got in, like John just said, he's wrote legislation. We've got legislation signed where you can no longer do that. It would have to be a statewide referendum or legislation. Right now, and I'm going back a couple years, when there was 28 states that had right to work, those were the lowest paying states in the nation for wages, right? Because you undermine anybody that's going to do a group negotiations for better working conditions, safety, and wages. And so what happens then is when those unions become weaker, nobody's to stand up for the average worker, because no matter what the unions do, what they say, rising sea raises all ships. So as the unions demand more money and more benefits and better working conditions, everybody benefits from that.
Yeah.
And if there's a right
to
work,
it creates prosperity in the community.
Correct. Not too many union members or any working person is going to take, you know, his paycheck and just throw it in the bank. When you give tax breaks to multimillionaires or billionaires now, what do? They buy a new boat or a plane, but it doesn't come right back into the economy. With your average worker working out there, it churns the economy because they're putting it right back. Maybe they buy a little better steak, or they eat a little better, or buy another car where they would have had to wait another 5 or 10 years, and that gives employment to more and more people. The whole point of right to work is to undermine that.
Yeah, and this was, I mean, this is, the Republican Party looked at labor as, you know, funding the Democratic Party and said, okay, we're gonna destroy them. And this is part of the right to work for less program that the Republicans pushed through Congress with Taft-Hartley. And it allows, Jim Allen, it allows these free riders that John was talking about, where basically they can say, no, I don't want to pay into the union, but yes, I want to work here. So
in Illinois, Governor Pritzker gets it, and he signed into law that there are no right to work for less zones in the state of Illinois without going through the General Assembly. So when Rauner took over, he took over and he tried to start picking off every suburb at a time, going saying, hey, you can sign on and you can be right to work for less. So you eliminate the prevailing wage in your area. So if the prevailing wage is set in Illinois by the unions because they have the majority of the work, so if it's $80 an hour, $70, $60, whatever, you could sign on in your own village, say Schaumburg or whatever, and you know what? Now it's a right to work for less. You can do your votes for $20 an hour.
Right.
So that's what it is. I always compare this to what they're trying to do. So you got Social Security. Everybody here loves Social Security, right? Everybody pays into the Social Security. If tomorrow the government said, you know what? If you guys want to pay into Social Security, you can. If you don't, you don't have to. You're still going to get Social Security. Who's going to pay into Social Security? Nobody. Right. And what's going to happen to Social Security? It's going to go down into the tubes.
Which, by the way, is why the Republicans are trying to do that to Social Security.
But that's the whole same philosophy with unions. If you don't have dues, you can't run a union. Right. And they eliminate the dues, and that's their game plan. Same with what I just said about Social Security.
Right.
So, and that is the Republicans' game plan, to eliminate unions. Unions are the last voice of the working people. period.
Yeah.
And they know that.
So what are we, you know, like I said, Harry Truman fought this. Other Democratic presidents have given certainly lip service to it. Lyndon Johnson did. Jack Kennedy mentioned it once. I don't recall any modern presidents who have really picked up this banner. I know that there was a lot of talk at the beginning of the Obama administration that card check was going to be on his priority list, but you know, I think they made the strategic decision, you know, right or wrong, to do health care instead. Yeah. I would have tried both, but your thoughts on where the Democrats are at on this?
Well, it, federally, the Davis-Bacon is something that is similar. It's prevailing.
This is prevailing wage law.
Yes. The Democrats do stand up against the Republicans on that.
But that's only
federal. Federal project.
And that's only with projects that are paid for with federal money.
Federal money. So right. We do get help from the Democrats when Republicans take over. We get enough people. Even some of the Republicans will come to battle against repeal of Davis-Bacon. But this is more locally right to work. So, you know, in the South, they beat down wages and they've got right to work zones everywhere. They're actually, I think, half the country is right to work, which is amazing.
Yeah, you would think that workers would figure this out. And it just astonishes me that they don't. Is this a messaging problem or is this just a priority problem?
Again, it's a nice sounding word, right? Right to work. Everyone's got a right to work.
Yeah.
Why are you going to stop me from working? They don't get it.
Yeah, well, this is why I'm trying to re-message it, because, you know, if the pro-choice movement had instead called themselves the anti-life movement,
because
you get the pro-life movement,
right.
They'd be shooting themselves in the foot.
Yeah, you're right.
Now that the active ingredients in Viagra and Cialis have pretty much gone generic, there's some great new products out that contain these FDA-approved drugs. Still require a prescription, but you can get it now online. The latest is bluechew.com, B-L-U-E-C-H-E-W. That's blue like the color. And you can take these anytime, day or night, on a full stomach. Since they're chewable, they work twice as fast as the pill, so you can be ready whenever the opportunity arises. And if you could benefit from that extra function and confidence, Blue Chew is a fast and safe way to do it. And they ship online. It's prescribed online, ships straight to your door in a discreet package, no in-person doctor visit, no waiting at the pharmacy, no more awkwardness. It's made in the USA and ships direct, cheaper than a pharmacy. Right now, we've got a special deal for our listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free when you use the code TOM, T-H-O-M. You just pay $5 in shipping. Again, that's BLUECHEW.com. Promo code TOM, T-H-O-M, to try it for free. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, faster choice. And we thank them for sponsoring our podcast.
Tom Hartman here with you from the Bricklayers District Council building in Elmhurst with WCPT. I want to talk about organizing, how to grow, the how-to guide on growing union membership. Jim Allen, the president of the Bricklayers District Council 1. You want to kick this off?
A lot of it, I think, is educating people. Like during the break, I had a couple of people come up and say, well, how do you get into the union? You know, I have some young sons that want to get in. A lot of people don't realize that, you know, the union membership is open to everybody. You can go on the website and you can sign up for any trade, plumber, bricklayers, whatever. And you get on a waiting list, and I mean, that's pretty much how everybody in this world got on there. And it's open to anybody. It's free. The education is free. And again, because of the lack of union membership from the Reagan on down, people forget what unions are all about. But they're on the rise. I know there's been data out there that people are really starting to look at a union and say, wait a minute, why don't I just join a union? I can better my life. Even at college people that think the only way to get ahead in life is go to college, and now they're sitting there thinking, wait, I'm going to go to college. I'm going to walk out with $100,000 in debt, or I can join a union, and at the age of 19, I can be making $40,000, $50,000 with a pension, health and welfare, and an annuity, which is a separate pension. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's education. We got to get the word out, and we do have labor management co-ops that do get the word out. One of them is Cisco. It's a labor management with all the building trades. So there are, it's education, getting people back to understanding what a union is.
And and there should be a media strategy to that too. And, you know, again, the unfortunate thing, so much of our media, particularly the radio landscape, is all locked up by giant right-wing corporations that program bizarre right-wing stuff. But that's my rant. That's a whole other thing. Matt Gugala, the vice president of Smart 265, your thoughts on how to grow a union membership.
So not only am I the vice president, but I'm also the director of organizing for Local 265. Oh. Yeah, big time. So the union organizers are the grassroots. We're the heart and soul of the union, right? So we're out there daily talking with people, going on the job sites, talking to workers that are being exploited, talking to people that have been working in the trade, and we want to get them in to organize so they have some bargaining rights, you know. So what we do is we try to educate, as Jim was saying. We get out in the community. We do all kinds of community service projects. We do, food pantries. We do everything just to get in the community and show that the unions aren't the bad thing that people may have associated them with, right? Yeah. So we're out there talking with these people that already do the work, and then you'd think it's an easy sell. However, it's not, because the way that the way the working world works, they say, well, can the union promise you, 40 hours a week? Can they promise you this? Can they promise you that? Even though they're not promising that, but they.
Oh, you mean this is the riff that non-union corporations, anti-union, I know it's.
That's right. They try to inoculate.
Union busting is a $2 billion a year industry. I heard
that's
that a
right.
couple years ago.
That's right.
Is it just corporations that a corporation can hire to come in and prevent people from unionizing?
That's
or,
right.
Or
and isn't that funny? Because percentage-wise, the unions are not taking over the world right now, right? Percentage-wise, we're at a small percentage of the actual workforce. Right. However, billions of dollars are spent on trying to crush the unions, right?
It
makes no sense. Right.
Yeah. So, well, it does from the point of view of these greedy corporations.
That's
to
exactly
paraphrase
what
Liz Warren.
Yes. Yeah. It's the morality that's missing in the corporate side. So we're out there. We talk with these folks and we try to bring them in. And it's a long conversation. I've been on the roof. With a guy that's 6'5" and he's gonna. I'm figuring he's gonna throw me off the roof and he's screaming at me. I don't need the union. I need nothing to do with the union. And then you see him driving maybe 6 months, 8 months later, and he waves to you, hey, I'm going to call you, right? And then he calls, and then he kind of comes to the senses. And then you get a text from him a year later and say, that was the best decision I've ever made in my life. Thank you. My family thanks you. And so it's really rewarding at times, but the growing of the union is a tough deal, and the organizers are the grassroots of that, and we're out every day trying to explain and show the real face of the union, not the face that the billions of dollars is spent to show us.
Amen. John Daniel, business manager for Smart Local 265. Weigh in.
Organizing. So Matt Gugala is one of our organizers, the director of organizers. We got three full-time organizers. I just want to take a second and give a shout-out to all the organizers that are out there. That's a tough job. It's a long game. They're in the trenches talking to non-union contractors and workers on a regular basis, trying to build rapport, to build confidence so that these disenfranchised workers, this workforce, actually trusts Matt coming out to the job site and the believability that we actually make twice what they make and that we actually have family health care and that we have a sustainable standard of living that they can achieve, take care of their family and retire with some dignity. When Matt walks on the job site and talks to me as a non-union worker and tells me that, it seems fairy tale-ish. So it takes days, months, potentially years for Matt to convince that this is real.
He's got a job somewhere.
The guy out working. So yeah. I want to push back on one thing that seems to be in the industry is that there's a shortage of manpower for construction jobs. There is definitely not a shortage of manpower for construction jobs. There's a shortage of manpower for low-paid wages jobs. So there's a shortage of a workforce that will work for next to nothing. There's an absolute strong, viable workforce out there, and we're spending tons of resources to reach into communities, the disenfranchised community in the building trades, the females, the minorities. One of our full-time brand-new business agents is Louise Medina, a female. We spend a ton of resources trying to reach out to those disenfranchised workers to bring them into our fold and show them what it's like to actually earn a living and be able to provide for your family.
Right. And that speaks to the issue that, back in the 50s and 60s when I was growing up and looking at my dad's union, it was a largely all-white workforce. In fact, in some cases, some unions even were keeping people of color out. That has all changed now.
Absolutely. We through Cisco, through several of our labor management cooperative committees, internally We're on an absolute mission to change the makeup of our union, to be able to communicate with the next generation of workers who talk completely different than us. We're spending tons of resources from an international level all the way down to the grassroots to bring those people into our fold.
That's great. John Daniel, Matt Nogala, Jim Allen from Chicago, from Elmhurst, Illinois.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, everybody. It's great to have you all with us. Also chipping in on this, Mark 265, the Painters District Council 14, the GWC Injury Law Firm, the Roofers, Waterproofers, and Allied Workers Local 11, and Operator Engineers. Today, we're with a special labor show. We've got, Chicago's a great labor city, Illinois is a great labor state, but Chicago in particular always has been. I grew up just down the road in Lansing. We spent a lot of time in Chicago growing up. I came from a labor family, and it is, you know, it's just good stuff. It's, if you want to have a middle class, you have to have organized labor. Particularly, the larger the company, the more important it is to unionize it, I would say. Although, you know, would anybody disagree with that?
No.
Yeah, okay. I mean, you know, how do you deal with a company, you know, if you're one of 1,000 people, you know, if you're the actual person who's making the decision lives in a different state even. I mean, you know, it's this is crazy stuff. So with us now is Jim Allen, the president of the Bricklayers, who's kind of our host for this, and John Spiros, the business manager with the Painters District Council 14, and Miles,
Beatty.
Miles Beatty.
I'm executive director of the Finishing Contractors Association.
Great. So let's talk about the myth of labor versus management. Jim, you want to kick this off?
Well, I think there is a big myth that management hates unions. And here in Chicago, and I've been president of the district council for 15 years, so I've been here a long time. That's not true. We have a great relationship, and on the next segment, we have Richard Lauber, who's a Mason contractor, who's going to sit down with us. But we have a great relationship throughout the whole district council of the various trades with our contractors and our membership. So it is a myth, obviously, created by the right-wing anti-union people.
From an employer's point of view, why would an employer want to have a union?
Well, it's a trained workforce, drug-free workforce, OSHA-trained. We have OSHA training constantly.
So you don't have to worry about accidents on the job, yes, that are going to cost you money, that are going to raise your, yeah, insurance rates, that are going to screw up the job that you're, yeah, working on.
Yeah, no doubt. And I'm sure John can talk a little bit more because he has his contractor here, and he can explain their relationship. And I know, because I know John well, that the painters have a good relationship with their contractors too.
Mm-hmm. Okay, John, you want to pick that up? John Spiro is the business manager with Painters District Council 14.
Everybody thinks that it's always an adversarial position, but it's not with management. And I think for the most part, and I can speak for our contractors, they want their workers to thrive, have a good life, and provide for their kids, and so on and so forth. And that's why we cooperate with a lot of initiatives. We have what we call a STAR program, which is safety training and recognition, where our members, as journeymen, they've gone through the apprenticeship, can continue their life skills to learn programs, and are eligible to win a car. Every year we give away a car for people to take those classes. Now, that's paid for through a cooperation trust fund. Miles could probably add more to that, but it's not only that, it's our apprenticeship program. Labor management, since on that as trustees, our welfare program for insurances, our labor management sits on that and provides the best benefits and the pension and some other stuff, but it provides the best for our members.
To boil that down into a soundbite, would it be right to say that basically for an employer, what a union brings to them is it lifts off the shoulders of the employer and puts onto the shoulders of the union a whole set of burdens of education, of filtering the workforce to make sure you've got, you know, the workforce that you want, things like that?
It's funny you say that, because it, somewhat it is. But it's on both our shoulders,
yeah.
And we're both stepping up to that to plate on it. But a lot of your safety things are mandated by law that the employer has to give you a safe work site, mm-hmm. prepare you for those unsafe things that may happen to you, proper respirators and such and that. So our STAR program does that. It's on both our shoulders then.
Right.
So we're not taking it completely off because they're not really wanting to give it up. They want to have some responsibility as well.
Miles Beatty. Jump in here.
Well, I would say that as a signatory painting contractor for 35 years...
Now, wait a minute. What does signatory mean?
Means that we are a union painting contractor. Okay, signatory with District Council 14. Mm-hmm. That was my career for 35 years before I became executive director of the Contractors Association. Mm-hmm. So as a contractor... It's more than that. It's the morally, the right thing to do is to be union.
Now, the contractors are the employers.
Correct.
Okay.
And I always went to bed at night knowing that my guys and my women had great health insurance. They had a pension that when they got done with their careers, they could live a comfortable life, that they could educate their children, that they could buy a home, that they could raise a family and send their kids to college or to apprentice school. My dad was a union painter as well, so I followed in his footsteps. I still, to this day, hold my card. I've been in the union 41 years, in spite of being a business owner. And I just think being signatory, being union, is the only way to go if you're going to be a contractor, regardless of the trade.
Yeah. Jim, how do you respond to the right-wingers who say that, well, you know, just this whole mythology that companies really shouldn't be unionized? I mean, is there a straightforward, simple way to address that?
Well, I think a lot of contractors' mindset is no one's going to tell me what to pay my employee.
Right.
So they don't like collective bargaining agreements where we sit down and negotiate an agreement for a three-year term usually. So they find that offensive, some of them. Some of them thrive to be the gutter contractor that the union price is $100 and they get in at $50 and steal that work and then misclassify their workers, the whole thing, the illegal immigration that's here working under the radar and then misclassifying. So it's, you know what, like Miles just said, if you have any decency as an employer, you like your members to be paid well. Mm-hmm. You want them to retire. You want them to have health and welfare. I mean, he said it so elegantly that... I wish every contractor, and most of them are in our world, but Miles really hit it out of the ballpark when he said that, because you have an obligation. You know, you talked about it. You've been in businesses all your life, and you have employees that you feel an obligation to. Yeah. And
as a small employer,
yeah.
You know, it's more of a personal relationship as opposed to a large
there's
larger
no doubt.
Company.
And then you get someone like a Donald Trump, who has a reputation of screwing everybody that ever worked for him.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's
he's
not,
proud of it.
He's proud
he's
of
been
it.
Sued over 3,000 times, and he brags about
it. Very proud of it. We had a marble contractor one time that sat on our labor management, and this was before Donald Trump name even came up, and he was from New York. He said, I never do any work for Trump. He screws every employee, never pays him. And that was 15 years ago that he told me that.
Wow.
And he says, I'm friends with him. Never worked for him a day in my life because he won't pay you.
Jim Allen, John Spiros, Miles.
Beatty.
Welcome back. We're live from the Bricklayers District Council in Elmhurst, the building here. Tom Hartman here with you. We're discussing, you know, broadly speaking, from an employer's point of view. And Richard Lauber is with us. He is a Mason contractor, as in, that's masonry, right?
Correct, yep.
And J&E Duff is the company. And tell us, first of all, just to kind of set the stage, Richard, what does a Mason contractor do?
Well, we do... We build walls out of brick, block, concrete block, stone, any masonry material.
Mm-hmm.
And we're a commercial mason contractor, so we do schools, municipal buildings, factories, apartment buildings, the whole gamut of construction.
Build a building out of brick or out of yeah.
Correct.
And does that also include things like interior work, like doing bathrooms and things, or is that a whole separate thing?
That would be a separate contractor.
Different kind of
correct.
World.
Yep.
And so from a contractor's point of view, in other words, from an employer's point of view, why is it of value to you to have unionized workers?
Well, I can't imagine not being a union contractor. I'm a third generation owner of J&E Duff. We started in 1936, and we've always been what I would consider a partner with the union. Mm-hmm. My father particularly is a great example to me as far as how to get along with the union leadership. I serve on as a management trustee on a number of the pension funds, the health and welfare, the training center fund. It's sort of, it's in my blood, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And I can't imagine not being a union contractor. It's the only way to go as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. And how does it work? I mean, you know, from your point of view as an employer, I guess, how does it work? I don't know quite how else to ask that question.
It works great. I mean, we, as was mentioned in the previous segment, we get to the best of the best. We have highly trained bricklayers. We also have union laborers, union operating engineers. As was stated earlier, I'm able to employ people who can have good benefits, have health insurance for their families, get a good pension. They can live in the communities where we work. The Chicago area is not the cheapest place in the world to live, but yeah. The people that work for me can live here, pay a lot of taxes, send their kids to college, be full participants in what society has to offer.
Yeah. John, I see you taking some notes here. John Daniel, the business manager of Smart Local 265, your thoughts on this?
Well, Tom, I think a lot of people don't really understand our infrastructure and how we're structured, and the myth that contract or labor and management don't get along is really a terrible myth. All of our funds, our training fund, our health and welfare, our pension, everything is a trust fund, so duly administered between labor and management. So we sit at the table.
Trust fund is a transparent fund. It has a particular legal structure.
That's correct. Yeah, Taft-Hartley is generally how it's referred to for at least the pension and health and welfare. The decisions for training, for safety, for health and welfare, for benefit improvements, for pension structure is duly administered by labor and management. So we work in a cooperative fashion on a regular basis. Now, there is times where labor and management, we negotiate contracts, and in that particular moment we put a hat on that my job is to represent my membership and their job is to represent their employer base. Outside of that negotiation, we walk in harmony to the benefit of our industry. That's right. Really what it is. And I think something else people are missing is the building and construction trades, by nature, is a transient workforce. So you may work for contractor X today, contractor Y tomorrow, and contractor C the next day. Throughout, you're constantly changing your employer depending on which employer gets the work. So maintaining a healthy family, a good employee for the contractor base, depends on continuity with healthcare, depends on continuity with pension plans, continuity with training. So one of the ways you can identify the union is a human resource piece of a contractor or an employer. So we manage the experience of the employee. We work cooperatively with the contractor or the employer to develop what does that employee look like? What do they need for training? What kind of health care can we provide them? What kind of pension can we provide them? Collectively, how do we impact that employee, my member's life, so that he has a successful career path, his family is taken care of, and he's productive in his community? That's really how we like to frame it.
Yeah. Jim?
Well, yeah.
Jim Allen, president of the Bricklayers.
Yeah, I think John hit a lot of things there. Like Richard said, he's on the pension board, the health and welfare, annuity fund, the apprentice and training. And you know what he gets paid for that? And there's a lot of hours that he puts in, and not just him. There's about seven trustees, management. They get paid zero. So that's all volunteer for them because they care about the industry. So they care about their workers, they care about their pension, and they are responsible for making sure that those pensions are run correctly and the health and welfare is funded correctly. And that's all stuff that they volunteer to do and on their own. And that's 8 contractors that sit on those boards. So it is a good working relationship. It has been since I've been here.
That's great. That's great.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Complete with a live studio audience, our own Peanut Gallery. It's great having you all here. Some of you are old enough to remember Peanut Gallery. Remember Howdy Doody?
I've got an important message for all my listeners. Economists will tell you that rising gold prices are an indicator of a failing currency. Well, gold is already up over 10% just since January and up over 33% in the last 3 years. What is all this really telling us? Well, the last crash was just a warning. It's only been papered over with trillions of dollars in new debt, and statistically, the next crash is already overdue. This reality has pushed the demand for precious metals to price levels not seen in nearly 6 years. The time to buy gold is now, before the crash and before the next price increase. The big questions everyone asks are, who can I trust and what types of gold do I buy? Call my friends at ITM Trading at 1-888-OWN-GOLD. The proper gold and silver strategy will help secure all your major assets, including your entire wealth portfolio. Call ITM Trading at 1-888-OWN-GOLD. Ask them for their free gold protection guide and secure your wealth while you still can. That's 1-888-OWN-GOLD. 1-888-OWN-GOLD.
Tom Harbin here with you. I'm in Elmhurst today at the Bricklayers District Council 1 building. This whole gig event, we got a studio audience, we've got pizza, we're having a great time. It's all brought to you by the Bricklayers, as well as Spark 265, the Painters District Council 14, GWC Injury Law Firm, the Roofers, Waterproofers, and Allied Workers Local 11, and the Operating Engineers Local 399. And I don't know if anybody in the audience has any questions for anybody on our panel. Any questions about labor? There's a microphone right there. And if there's any specific questions that you have, feel free to step up to the microphone, and Melissa here will help you out. Continuing our conversation, oh, by the way, something I just need to mention to our audience. Now, I'm kind of outside of labor, but the U.S. Supreme Court just ruled that Donald Trump, well, that his administration can't put a citizenship question on the census. This was designed, This question was designed to basically scare away anybody who had anybody in their family or their extended family who might not be a legal citizen of the United States from answering the census, which would then defund those parts, you know, cut federal funding, and in some cases state funding, to those parts of the country where where there's a significant, largely Hispanic population. And it turns out we found out when this guy who put this whole thing together died and his daughter got his computer hard drives, we found out this was an entirely race-based policy. 4 of the 5 conservatives on the court wanted to keep the census question on there. John Roberts was the one who flipped, the Chief Justice. So, you know, I think he's really starting to get concerned about the future and reputation of his own court. So, labor questions. We have a questioner. Your name and where you're from, and what's your question?
Hi, my name is Tanya, and I'm from LaGrange Park. I have friends who are in unions but continue to vote red. What are some talking points that you recommend that I can use when talking with them? Because it just baffles me how, as said before, you know, during the Reagan years, that's when the unions and middle class started to, you know, disappear. But they continue to be strong Republican voters hurting themselves. So what are some talking points that would be helpful that I use when speaking with them?
That's a great
or like
question.
When they post on Facebook.
Yeah.
One of my comments.
Yeah, that's a great question, and I want each one of our panelists to take a shot at it. Jim Allen, the Bricklayers president.
Yeah, you know what? I sit at this podium in Union Night, and I talk to my members and tell them, you know, the Republican Party is out to destroy unions. Take any other issues they have and whatever, but they're out to destroy unions. But it's hard to convince some of these people, and I know I spot a Trump supporter a mile away, but I can tell just by their body language when I'm talking at a union meeting who the Trump supporters are or who the Republicans are, and they think it's their friend. And I don't know, no matter how many times I'm, how many letters I write, no matter how many times I speak, I don't know how to really turn them. It's very difficult.
Billionaire Rupert Murdoch has built a very effective propaganda machine to promote the billionaire's worldview and the billionaire's point of view. And it's so sad that average working people watch Fox News and think that they're getting
it. Actually, and I don't watch Fox News, but if you ever put it on, you can see how they're brainwashed.
Yeah.
And we have, what, one radio program that's liberal?
One progressive station in Chicago.
And about 500 right-wing ones that sit there and get in everyone's head.
Yeah. It's actually almost 2,000 in the country. Right-wing radio stations.
That's crazy.
You've got Sinclair with 200 and, I think, 12 TV stations. And there's maybe, I don't know, 20, 30 progressive radio stations around the country. John, your thoughts?
Tanya, it's a great question. And I think everyone in the room has dealt with the same thing, especially in social media. Some advice to you directly, and I may have heard this on Tom's show or Bill Press or someone's show at some point, and I had to deal with it with my own family. My father's a minister. So politically, we don't see eye to eye very closely or really at all. What doesn't work is start picking a fight with them. So as you phrase your question, how do I argue the point? Well, it's an intimate conversation. If it starts where you need to argue your point, you can't change their mind anyway. So you're going to take a defensive position, get all fired up, and lose friends either through social media or in your community. That's not my advice to you. That's not the correct approach. We've developed a program called Smart Army. Matt Gugala and a handful of our staff and members are engaged in the community. Matt talked about food banks and volunteering at VFWs. It gives us the opportunity to humanize ourselves to maybe opposition or people that don't align themselves with our point of view. When we get past you're them and we're us and let's fight, and you actually show them that, hey, I got three boys and a wife and been married 26 years and my kids go to school just like your kids, you can actually have a conversation about how organized labor impacts you personally or how you see that impact affects people that aren't even part of the labor movement, because it brings dollars into the community and it brings stable families. There's nothing bad about it. It's just been villainized for years and years and years. So I caution you to don't take an argumentative approach, because that person you can't change anyway and you're going to get frustrated. Find a way to humanize yourself and get them to listen to you. It's not easy. We all wrestle with it as labor leaders, with our own members, with our own neighbors. But taking the time to humanize, what I heard on the radio was, when you get in an argument with someone, you're not arguing a point of view, you're arguing with how they define themselves.
Identity.
You're no longer talking about a topic. I can compartmentalize that it's a topic, but the person I'm debating with, that's how they define themselves. They're either pro-choice or anti-whatever. They're pro-gun, they're anti-gun. Well, that's who they are. Talk about the effect of guns in the community. Talk about... It's an intimate conversation. Otherwise, you're just going to get into a fight and get frustrated and throw your hands up and potentially lose friends.
Yeah, start with your commonalities. And speaking of guns, tomorrow night in Darien at Frugal Muse Bookstore, I will be signing my new book, The Hidden History of Guns and the Second Amendment. John Lauber, the Mason contractor with J&E Duff, your thoughts on
I can add really to the answer to the question. I think part of the problem, though, is... union members who are voting red, as you say, they're living here and they kind of take everything for granted. They don't have the experience of what it's like in another, say, less pro-union environment or market. And I think one thing you could do perhaps is just remind them of what they have through their union membership, and remind them that there's a particular political party that is fighting those kinds of things. It reminds me of a time we were ordering a material stone from another part of the country, and it was being delivered, and the person I was talking to was explaining, okay, when it's delivered, you're going to have to unload it yourself. It's like, okay, that's fine. And then the comment was, but I'm sure you could hire a couple of Mexicans to unload the truck for you. And I was just taken aback by this sort of different worldview, if you will, of this is how you treat employees, or this is how you treat people that do the kind of work that
it's
I do.
It's essentially dehumanizing.
Right. And but in other parts of the country, I know that the construction workers are sort of at the bottom of the barrel in terms of how they're treated.
In the right to work for less states.
Exactly. And so I think people here that they take that for granted. I know, because I know I have, you know, employees who would think they'd be voting against their interests, but part of it is I think they just take for granted what they have here.
Great. Thank you very much for that question. We have another question?
We have a question for Richard.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Jim from Chicago, and I've been a lifelong union member and the son of a carpenter union member also. And all my life I've talked to young guys about, you know, their perceptions of being in the union. And it's so many guys have this negative attitude, and also the whole idea that the contractors and union members are at odds with each other and not partners. What are you, especially with being a contractor, and the other gentleman that was a Contractors Association head, what are you doing to change that perception that there's neither, that they're partners, they are not adversaries, and that there's, it's to everybody's benefit? You know, what are you doing, or what can you do about that?
For Richard Lauer of J&E Duff.
Yeah, I don't know that I'm doing a whole lot towards that end, but one thing that comes to mind is I often have had people ask me, you know, of course, the conversation that don't know me well, what do you do? I'm a contractor. Oh, union or non-union? I'll say union. And the response is often, oh, I'm so sorry. Oh, that must be terrible. And then I can educate them about the value of being a union contractor. Like, no, I'm glad to be a union contractor. But then there will also be follow-up questions of, well, isn't it true that your bricklayers, there's a limit, they can only lay so many brick a day because they're in the union? It's like, no. Or you must not be able to fire somebody because if once you hire them, you got to keep them for life because of the union. It's like, no, this is, in fact, it's the easiest business probably to fire someone based on poor performance than any other industry. So that might go towards what you're talking about, just educating people who have these distorted, mythical views of what it means to be a union.
We have questions.
Hi, Tom. Hi. I'm Cindy Vogel. Watch your show, big fan of yours. I'd like to ask what the unions are doing to get into the high schools, to maybe, as opposed to having that college day, have a union day of, you know, so kids can learn more about, as opposed to going to college. I know when I was a kid in the 70s in high school, everybody wanted to be in a union. You wanted to be a carpenter or electrician or a post office or something.
Yeah.
And now they don't talk about that like they used to. And I think it's important that they do that. And I'd just like to add one talking point for your Republican friends, is that if they are Fox News watchers in the evening, that is not a fact-based show. It's all opinion. And so that would be something that you could say to someone, is make sure that you look, Google all that, because it is not fact-based. It's opinion.
Yeah, or even try watching a different network.
Well, that would be the best.
Oh,
and my husband was a pipe fitter, Local 597. Just want to throw that
That's
out.
Great. So to recap your question in a sentence is?
About going to the high schools and promoting the unions within the high schools.
What can the unions be doing to spread the word? Jim? Jim Allen, president of the Bricklayers.
Yeah, we have a labor management called Cisco Construction Industry, and they do multiple, probably 75 to 100 different hands-on with all the trades. They will take their instructors, our instructors, bring them to the inner city and have a hands-on. So if you want to learn to touch a brick and feel what it feels like, or nail a hammer, electric, all the trades are there, sheet metal. Everyone's at these fairs to try to bring the inner city kids and minorities into the trades. And it's probably at least 75 different programs. And so same with all of our building trades apprenticeships. We go out and do outreach programs in the different areas, high schools. Not like what it used to be. You know, it used to be taught. First of all, they don't teach labor in schools anymore. And so a lot of the kids grow up, they don't know what a union is, but I'm sure we can talk about everybody's training centers that go and do this. And I know we do it a lot, and I know the other trades are there as well. So the kids get to get a feel for the building trades just by seeing it hands-on.
And the outreach. John Daniel with Smart Local 265.
I think your question's a great question, and I believe that there's been an institutional problem with public education or education in general, the expectation that all kids must go to college, and if not just college, an Ivy school, and if not just an Ivy school, a private elite school. There's been that institutional message that's been really beat down everybody's throat. They believe that that is the only path to success for children. As Jim was saying, we do a ton of outreach now. We go to a lot of career fairs. But a lot of times the kids are just paraded in front of us and they check a box saying that they saw us. And so we're switching to where we're through Cisco, through ourselves. We're inviting guidance counselors to our training center and hosting career fairs at our training center. So they bring the kids that want to come. I think there is a trend that's turning in the public school system. I have a good friend that's a school board president, and I've heard it at a couple other districts where, you know, they have college signing night for athletes, and everybody claps and do the picture, and they acknowledge if a child's going to go into the military at graduation. I'm starting to see a trend where they're actually doing apprenticeship signing days. So they're recognizing the children that are signing up for Sheet Metal Workers Union through SMART or through the Pipefitters 597. The school districts are starting to turn. It's a long game. It's been saturated to them that it's not a successful career path. You really can't sustain a living. I think that message is starting to change, and I think it's from the effort of the people in this room and collectively unions at whole.
John Spiros with the Painters. Before you, just very quickly, I grew up in Lansing, Michigan. Pretty much everybody in my neighborhood worked at GM or Fisher Body or something like that. It was a total union. We studied in elementary school the history of labor. I knew the history. I knew what the Pullman Porter, I knew what Haymarket Square. I knew that by the time I was 12 years old. We have lost that.
Why?
Let me toss it to you, John Spiros.
Well, I think a lot of it, opening a big subject here, but a lot of, on the college level anyway, is corporate money being put into colleges and they direct the training where it goes. But also what, you go back to the question, we do apprenticeship seminars at our facility as well. We have the building trades, which are all the building trades in the Chicagoland area, visit different schools, have different events. We also do some outreach to community groups like Chicago Women in the Trades. We have our own program called the Young Lions that reach out to schools and that, but it's seeing more and more of it now where the high schools are asking us to come back and see them so they get an understanding. They're starting to understand not everybody goes to college. So, and plus you come to our program, you earn a good wage if you're union and benefits, and you have no debt when you get out of school.
But right now we've got Republicans who are literally trying to have religion taught in our schools.
Oh, yeah, right.
Democrats need to start saying, we need to teach the history of labor in our schools. Damn it. I mean, this is real stuff. And thank you so much to all the groups, to the bricklayers here who have hosted us, to our studio audience. Thank you. Thank you to WCPT. Thank you all for being on our panel. John, and Jim, thank you so much. And don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. It requires all of us to participate. So get out there, get active. Tag, you're it.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit tomhartman.com.